Okay, so for the last talk of the day, we will hear Juliana that will talk about consent-based secure collaboration with Spiritly Goblins object capabilities. Thank you.
Yes. So, hello, everyone. As was just explained, my name is Juliana. I work at the Sprightly Networked Communities Institute. We are working on the next generation of the social web, and my colleagues Jessica Tallon and David Thompson will have talks about our core technologies, Goblins and Hoot, tomorrow. There will be a QR code at the end of the talk. You can get the links to their talks. But I'm talking about what I see as the biggest problem with collaborative and social software systems today, and how I think we can build better ones using, in fact, technologies that we're working on. So I didn't expect to have something in my hand, and I'm messing up the talk. So can y'all still hear me okay? So I feel that we build a lot of social and collaborative systems that are not based on consent. And I think that this is because historically, asynchronous communication didn't really have the option of privacy, right? We had mail, and then later we had telegraph, telephone, radio. And you could have basic encryption, but you couldn't have anything like we have now. You didn't have centralized storage of messages, right? So that you could choose who you wanted to see things. And this sort of just became encoded in our society, that we just assume that our communications and our interactions all have to be public. They have to be out of our control, right? And this hasn't been helped. Let me make sure I don't mess this up again. By the fact that this big companies perpetuate this, right? They sort of inherited these perceptions, and they've just continued to run with them. So we have Facebook and Twitter, which are big, you know, social platforms, right? And they benefit from these systems of organization because, well, frankly, they profit off of them because they turn user data into a commodity. And so you have examples of posts are being public by default, all of this. Because it's profitable, they're disincentivized from protecting user agency, user data. And even when they do have protections in place, these protections can be ignored and they can be abused by the people working there. So one example I find particularly disconcerting is Tesla. Tesla records everything that happens inside their cars to train their self-driving. And we've heard anecdotes of Tesla employees watching videos of Tesla drivers doing embarrassing things and laughing at them, which, you know, kind of sucks. And similarly, governments aren't really incentivized to protect user data either, and user agency, because they may have legitimate uses for this data, right? Census information, that sort of thing, or they might be abusive governments. We are standing in the EU, which has pretty good privacy and data protections, but I'm from the US, where we don't have very good privacy and data protections. And a few years ago, it was revealed that the NSA and US allies, for that matter, are collecting a huge amount of information about humanity. And again, even with protections in place, humans can violate those protections. And we have Edward Snowden shared stories of his coworkers contracting for the NSA, using NSA surveillance data to stalk their exes, which is, again, deeply disconcerting. So what do we do? And I think what we do is we build systems based first and foremost on consent. And in order to understand what consent is, we have to understand what it's not. It is not unclear communication. If you sign up for Facebook, you're asked to agree to a term of terms of service, which is a long document with legal jargon in it. It doesn't make sense. Or once you're on the platform, you might need to opt out of things because your posts are public by default, because Facebook can sell all this information about you by default. And this is stigmatized, right? So to revert slightly to the political context, there's this saying, if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear, right? And even if you feel that these conditions are too onerous and you don't want to use these platforms, you might not actually have a meaningful choice not to because of network effects or social pressures. Your friends are all on Facebook. How are you going to stay in touch with them if you don't use Facebook, right? If I sound like I'm picking on Facebook, it's probably because it's really bad. But what is consent? Consent, first and foremost, is it's informed, right? You're transparent about the context of the interactions. You're transparent about potential consequences, and it's freely granted. It's actively chosen, right? We assume in a truly consent-based system, we assume no by default, and then you choose to give a yes. And even when you do give that yes, it can be taken back. You can say no at any time. That's very important to consent. And I think that the object capability paradigm encodes as much of a model of healthy consent as can be encoded in a technical system. It's a relatively complex paradigm, or it seems to be at first at least, so I'll try to summarize it quickly. The basic idea is it provides both security and concurrency. I'll be focusing on the security, but I'll mention concurrency a little bit at the end. And it centers around capabilities. Capabilities are actively granted, and they can be revoked, as I'll show you. And as I have there, it can model consent as far as consent can be modeled. If you're a PL theory person, it is related to the actor model, which I personally find a useful analogy, and so I'll probably be talking about things in terms of actors here. So we have our objects, and they are actors in that they can receive messages, and in response to a message, they can create a new actor and thereby obtain a reference to that actor, or they can send a message which can include a reference to another actor, or they can change their behavior in response to future messages. And capabilities are just, at the programming language level at least, which is the level I'm most familiar with through Goblins, they're just references, you know, pointers, if you want to go down that low of a level. And so here we see a user object with a reference, a capability on the object Gary, and we see the user object sending the message Alice, to which Gary responds, "Hello Alice, my name is Gary." These diagrams are from our Heart of Sprightly white paper. They're describing code. They're not perfect for the things I'm going to be talking about, so I'll try to explain as best as I can. Capabilities can be limited, right? So in the context of consent, you can consent to a specific thing and not, you know, all of your posts being publicly available, as another example. And so here, this demonstrates some code. It's a procedure that spawns two objects, a blog and an admin, that have different capabilities on a collection of posts. The blog can read them, but not write them. The admin can write them, but not read them. And they can be revoked. So this diagram is relatively complex. You can ignore most of it. What's important is that we have the Robert object that has a reference to a capability on a proxy to the admin object. And we have Lauren over here on the left-hand side who's paying attention to everything Robert does because the proxy is telling about it. And Lauren can choose to revoke Robert's access to the admin object through the proxy, which in this diagram has happened. You see the little, I don't know how to describe this very well, the little switch that's up, right? And so in conclusion, I think that OCaps models consent really well. You have the necessity of explicitly granting a capability, because by default you have no capabilities, and you can choose exactly which aspects of an object's abilities you want to grant capabilities on, and so it's granular, just like consent in real life, which allows you to build trust and empower collaboration, because you know you probably won't meet a stranger and invite them to spend the night at your house. You'd probably, you know, go out to coffee or something first. I mean, you can invite them to your house if you want. Nothing wrong with that. I'm just a very anxious person. So, what do we actually do? How do we build consent into our systems? If you agree with my analysis and my proposed solutions, the first thing that I'm going to advocate is using the OCaPN protocol. So it stands for the Object Capability Network Protocol, and it allows OCaP systems to talk to each other over arbitrary network boundaries. And this goes back to the concurrency I was talking about earlier. So you can learn more about this at OCaPN.org or the GitHub page that I have linked there as well. And the action items here are to join the standards group, get involved in talking about what you want or need out of this sort of system, and the big one really is to implement OCaPN. And we especially need implementations in strongly typed languages, because in Sprightly we use Guile Scheme, which is a dynamic language, and then the other big implementation is in JavaScript, which is also dynamically typed. You can also implement all of OCaPs if you want, so these links are kind of the literature on OCaPs. Erights.org is preserving the knowledge of the E programming language, which was the first sort of full modern OCaPs programming language. And the longer link is to our Heart of Sprightly white paper. You go to sprightly.institute, press goblins, and then click Heart of Sprightly. You can get that as well, which is where the diagrams are from. And you can also support us. We're currently running a donor campaign, so I'm obligated to say. I'm not actually obligated to say, but I do want to say. That's my boss. You can go to sprightly.institute/donate and give us money, and you can also write software using goblins. You can run it on the web with our Hoot compiler, which is a scheme to WebAssembly compiler. And we really want this because we need to know what people actually want to build with these tools and what trouble they're having building those things so that we can provide the best tools possible. And you can tell other people about this stuff, right? Infect your friends and loved ones, as a book title puts it. And yeah, so that's that. Thank you, everyone. Thanks to the organizers of this dev room. If you want to see the rest of Sprightly's talks tomorrow, you can scan that QR code to get our blog post on it. So thank you.
Thank you. So we have the last couple minutes of the day if you have any questions. Oh, no. Everybody is tired. Ah, yes, sorry.
Does the OCAP model of collaboration make sense for managing access to, let's say, branches on a Git repository and maybe more fine-grained access than so things like that?
So I don't see why not. You could... you'd have to design the sort of level above. Because Git is not designed from an OCAP's perspective, you would need to design an interface sort of on top of it to manage access in an OCAP's friendly way. But there's no reason you couldn't. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Hi. I'm thinking about fatigue in giving consent in a very fine granular way. Do you have any thoughts about that?
That's a good question that I should probably have foreseen a little bit. Do you have any thoughts on this, Christine?
Well, I don't know. I think one of the things that's important about Sprightly's goblins is that the consent flow is actually fairly is natural, in that it flows from kind of the code and the interface abstractions that you end up having. So there's two ways that you can think about this from a code perspective. It doesn't end up being really onerous to like keep passing things around, because it's the same way that you program every day. It's basically passing around arguments to functions. That's exactly how the capability consent based approach works. And the second one is that we're very interested in something called secure user interfaces. There's a wonderful paper about this called Not One Click for Security by Alan Karp and some other of his colleagues. And it kind of shows how, like, one of the big things that they show with the capability-based UI paradigm is that, like, it kind of flows out of actually the natural actions that the user's expressing that they intend to do. And one of the big complaints that they ended up having at the end of it was that users were like, well, where's the security? And the problem was is that they expected to be inconvenienced, right? They expected to be bothered for a whole bunch of things. Whereas, you know, one great example of this, which you're probably already familiar with today, is in your browser, you can upload a file. So in your browser, you can probably upload a file, right, to a web page. But the web page can't download every file from your computer. It can't take anything at once. And that's because there's a consent-based flow there. When you click browse, it has something called a power box in capability literature. The file browser has the ability to get a capability to that specific file. So when the user selects that actually is a natural flow to be able to hand it to the web page. And the web page didn't have that, and it just feels so natural. Users don't really think about the fact that they're granting consent in that scenario, but it's the very thing that they're doing. And so it turns out that a lot of these consent flows, they're very similar to how people interact with each other as human beings, where like consent actually flows
out of the interactions.
Thank you. Thank you. So, any last question? We have about 20 seconds. No? Great. Then, thank you very much.
Thank you all.